Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Blackhawks Crazy podcast on WGNradio.com as well as on iTunes. And we'll tweet everything out. Chris Bowden with you, along with Scott King, the Chelsea blogger from WGNradio.com, as on this baseball opening day, we prepare for the home finale of the Chicago Blackhawks season. And we actually have some news today, Scott, that was kind of unexpected out of the blue. But I think the timing is right with the news that transpired before the Blackhawks practiced on Thursday after that big dramatic victory over the St. Louis Blues.
It's good to hear your voice box back at 100%.
It's getting there.
Congratulations.
It's getting there, right?
Oh, yeah. You were there for the big breaking news. I just saw it when I was parking, driving in here for the show, so we have some big juicy news to talk about.
Yeah, it happened before, kind of informal, before Blackhawks practice. There wasn't any announcement necessarily preceding the fact that John McDonough, president and CEO of the Blackhawks, was going to address the media, probably something that a lot of people have been waiting for a long time, with speculation running rampant, especially since the Blackhawks, you know, have been falling out of the playoff picture. But John McDonough announcing today that both Stan Bowman and Joel Quenneville will return for the 2018-2019 season, that despite the fact that the 9-year playoff run is over with, and despite the fact that since the 2015 Stanley Cup championship, there have been just two first-round series in which the Blackhawks were eliminated right away, 7 games in St. Louis a couple of years ago, and last year the first-round sweep from Nashville. Without further ado, let us have you hear from the principals involved, and we'll first start with John McDonough.
The season itself has been a disappointment, and we have to address and evaluate everything, but the decision has been made to retain Stan and Joel. I have confidence in them. Their track record is amazing. And there were a lot of circumstances that happened this year that were out of our control. That's not to say that areas of our team could not have performed better. They could have, and I'm not assessing blame, but I believe in both of them. I want both of them to succeed, and I think we're going to be headed in the right direction after a lot of reflection and assessment.
And how recently did you come to this conclusion, or did you have this feeling all along throughout the course of the season based on track records?
I met with Stan about a week ago. We had a really good conversation, and it was healthy. And it was positive. And I had the same conversation with Joel this morning. Stan notified Joel after the game last night. I talked to Stan this morning. So we wanted to try to clear this up before the end of the season, before that Sunday. But I'm not caught up in the past, in what's happened in the last 10 years. But I did say 1 year ago today, we were a favorite to win the Stanley Cup. That was 12 months ago. So we can't reflect back on that. We have to look forward, but we have to make the right decisions, and people are accountable.
And there's a fine line between patience and urgency here, too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Moving forward.
There's urgency here every day. That message is sent every single day. This year, the patience has been difficult. You know, we had a lot of losses at home that were just we hadn't seen that before. You know, we went through a streak where it just went dry here at the United Center. You know, and we could sense that it impacted our fan base and some other things. But you know, going forward, very positive, very optimistic. But yet, I think there's going to be some deep soul searching.
John went on to address a couple of other subjects as well, remaining confident that Corey Crawford will be back and ready to go next season, even though that hasn't happened, despite the expectation when he was first placed on the injured reserve for the second time back over the holidays. But Scott, based on the results that we've seen the last now 3 seasons running, and based on the bar that this organization has set, yes, there's going to be a lot of Blackhawk fans who think this isn't right, that someone should have to pay the price for what's going on this season on top of what's gone on for the last two seasons. But what are your thoughts? Are you surprised by this at all?
I'm not surprised by the news. I thought out of the two of them, if you're going to hold either Bowman or Quinville responsible, it was going to be Quinville. And I thought that decision would be made after the season. I'm surprised to hear it today. I didn't think that that news would break today or before any of these last couple games remaining. So, yeah, I'm surprised by the timing. But I like that they're sticking with Quinville. I know NHL coaches have a very short shelf life, and he's done really well with young players this year, like Alex DeBrincat, kind of keeping him away from top matchups that could shatter his confidence, letting him develop some other guys. And you could say, yeah, he didn't have much of a choice because they didn't have much to work with this season. But I thought he did really well with a lot of the younger players. And you heard McDonough talk about it in that soundbite there, that there were things out of their control this season, like Crawford. So, yeah, I like it. They're sticking with him. You know, let's see what happens next year. Let's see if he can utilize and keep on developing guys in this rebuild. And let's see if we get back in the playoffs next year.
Yeah, and actually, upon further review, I hate to sound like an NHL official or an NFL official here, but you know, perhaps having this preemptive strike before the weekend is out, before these final two games of the season, because everything would then be centered on speculation all the way from the end of Saturday night's game in Winnipeg all the way until what we believe will be a Monday clean out with meetings, clean out of the locker room as well, when we get to hear from all the principals involved. But I think that handling this right now, as long as this is a decision that you've made, you've come to this conclusion, and that everyone is in agreement that this is the plan moving forward, why wait? And why let any more questions swirling about the future hover over this team over the final two games, even though they are in pretty much meaningless, except for, you know, how it will impact the St. Louis Blues on Friday night at the United Center?
Now, because Joel's safe, do you think that means that all the assistant coaches are safe also? Are we moving on from the management angle of the team? Or is this all to set the table for what player personnel has to change?
You'll hear Joel say right here, because John, along with part of that Q&A that continued on, was whether he knows if Joel would bring his entire coaching staff back and whose responsibility that would be. Now, there has been speculation in the past that, you know, Stan, based on the moves that he made last year following the first round sweep, that, you know, he had a hand in, you know, an assistant coach moving along being Mike Kitchen, and that Joel wasn't happy about that. John said at the media conference or the get together that is totally Joel's call concerning his coaching staff this season. And as you'll hear, as we hear from Joel Quenneville here following practice today, primarily discussing the news of his return, at the very end, Joel does confirm that every member of his assistant coaching staff, unless it's something that one of these guys wants to pursue, he intends on bringing back. Let's hear the head coach's reaction to the news.
We're excited today, knowing that it's been a tough year, but I think that I think we all, you know, expect and look forward to getting back to where we want to be, and that's a contending team and learning from this experience from the beginning to the end, and finding ways to recapture what made us so successful in the past, and then finding that that appetite of winning again. But it was some good conversations with John and Stan, and so it was a it was interesting, and looking forward to getting back to where we expect to be.
Did you have any doubts? Were you wondering in any way?
Well, you speculation, you hear stuff, but it's one of those years where, you know, you don't know in our business, because you only control what you can control, and that's trying to, you know, have our group ready to go and our staff ready to go, and being a part of that. So it's that's what our focus is on, and trying to win the next game has always been the short term mindset of a coach and what we look to do, but I don't try to read too much or that kind of stuff and get in the speculation part of it, but it's we're happy where we're at today.
Joel, do you ever worry about your voice being lost over a 10-year period? It's been said that can happen when coaches have been around a while.
Yeah, I think that there's always talk about longevity in our business and shelf life, or how long is long enough, but I know that some coaches have been in places for seems like forever, and we've been very fortunate here. We've had some the organization has treated us as good as you could ever expect or want. We've had great teams to work with and coach. Rocky, John, Jay, Stan, down the list, and the position that they put us in to be successful has been you couldn't ask for a better environment for that kind of support for a coaching staff and a hockey team. So it's where you want to be, and I think that's we're fortunate in a lot of ways, and so we'll it's. We'll do everything we can to get back there, and I think that talking about reassessing and assessing all our options will be something that we'll look at. But certainly, I think we're disappointed in some ways in not making it. I think as a staff or as a coach, you'd certainly think and look back and some things you might want to do differently and learn from. And we accept a lot of that responsibility.
John, do you know any of that, or
what's that?
Do you not want to get specific?
I think whether it's it's usually from performance based on you can look at you can look at all the technical aspects, whether the goals we set up as a team at the beginning of the season. That's the area that we're short on, and that's we as a staff. That's where we got to absorb some of that responsibility.
John said that any staff changes would be your call. It's a relatively new staff. Do you anticipate making any changes?
No, I don't see any changes, no.
So that's Joel Quenneville quickly answering that question in terms of how it concerns Kevin Dineen and Ulf Samuelsson. Dan Granato is part of that coaching staff as well, along with the goaltending coach, Jimmy Waite. So he puts an emphatic period on any questions regarding staff changes. One thing John McDonough did go on to say later on in his meeting with reporters, he called out special teams. He called out some of their more experienced players needing to find a way to play better. We will hear from Jonathan Toews here in a moment. But now that the status quo remains, and if the same coaching staff remains, the big change that's going to happen is in the results that are going to be required for next year, because I don't see the same thing happening next year. How high that bar is set, whether it's getting back into the playoffs, whether it's getting to a conference final or winning a Stanley Cup compared to where they were this year, I'm not sure where that's going to be. There's going to be a bunch of decisions they have to make between now and then, but I don't think if we're sitting here in the same spot, Scott, a year from now, the status quo is going to remain.
No, yeah. I don't think so at all. I think locking these guys up today, on the management side, I thought obviously there's going to be a couple moves. You need a top defenseman, maybe you get a forward in there, a skilled guy. But now I feel like there might be even more turnover because you're not holding the coaches responsible. Basically, you're saying it's on the players more so. So you're going to be looking to make some big changes and maybe set some examples there.
Yeah, and the guys, John McDonough pointed this out as well. He said it's a wrong narrative, especially after this season, to consider Joel not a young player's coach or not wanting to coach up young players. Yeah, there have been some instances in the past where there were some players who just didn't catch on quickly enough, despite whatever talent levels that they have, even though that may be a favorite of a scouting staff or Stan Bowman himself. They've had to come to some middle ground on how to handle those situations. And now, if there is going to be turnover in the roster, the improvements are going to have to come from the guys who didn't perform up to standards this year. And those, unless there are going to be changes within this current roster as far as trades are concerned, there is some salary cap room to work with, but not a whole lot. So any other or further roster changes are going to have to come within the current Blackhawks group and current group in Rockford in order to, bring some people back. There are some decisions that have to be made with, guys along the lines of Anthony Duclair and Vinny Hinostroza certainly earned his way back here. Thomas Yurko, what are you going to do with him? Or are you looking for other players to come in and try and help out the depth in a better way And then again, if you are going to move on from those players, who's going to take them? At what price? So there are some crucial decisions to be made here, and especially, you know, following a commitment that Stan's also made with a couple of the defensemen that need to grow their games. I think we saw that a little bit with Jan Rutta again in Wednesday night's victory in St. Louis. Some of these crucial mistakes, Connor Murphy the same way, are popping up too many times and again, and they're going to have to move on from that.
If there's anything you could say about Q negatively this season, Chris, I think it was how much the lines change. I know he's famous for that and does it all the time, but maybe this was a year where you let guys stick and find chemistry a little bit. I think, like I said before with DeBrincat, I thought he was very fair and great with the younger players. But here's the opening night lineup I went back and found. You have Saad, Taves, Ponick. Ponick, no longer here, actually doing very well with the Coyotes recently. Hartman, no longer here. Schmaltz, Kane, Sharp, Anisimov, DeBrincat, Boma, Kiro, Hayden. Okay, so that's opening night lineup, and now here's last night. See how much has changed. Saad, Schmaltz, Kane, Yurko, Anisimov, Martinson, Sakura, Edsel, DeBrincat, Sharp, Camp, Hinostroza. And when I say last night, I mean Wednesday night's big overtime win.
Yeah, and the roster turnover has already begun. There are still some repairs that need to be made, unless, you know, they are totally convinced that this coaching staff, if it does remain intact, can bring out the best, bring out more in some of these players that they're going to need more from, you know, barring any moves during the offseason trade-wise. That leads us to one of our fan questions here, as long as we're coming off the sound with Joel Quenneville. Tommy Hawks on Twitter was asking us how much of the blame for this season rests with Q, whom Tommy Hawks adds he dearly loves.
You don't want to say I dearly love by accident.
No.
Chris Bowden dearly loves.
No, we don't want to do that. And yes, yeah, so, some of the blame has to remain. This thing can be spread out all over. There's blame to be spread all along. You know, even with the radio pre and post host, I guess.
Do you take a lot of blame for this season?
I do feel some sense of responsibility here. Doing so well, and then I show up. But there is a degree of blame to Q and the coaching staff. But if I have to look at the main things, it's the Crawford injury, and it's, you know, some of the core guys continuing to needing to adapt their game. You will hear Jonathan Taves in a moment here come out and say that. And that, you know, we always hear about this tune out factor with Joel, but and Jonathan also addresses this too. If there's any tune out on this team or any stale message players are hearing from Joel, the only guys who have been around for that message to get stale with is Taves, Kane, Sharp, Seabrook, Keith, Crawford. Maybe everyone else on this roster is relatively new, so there shouldn't be a stale narrative when it comes to the coaching staff. We brought this up before too.
Yeah, just a handful of guys. You know, Saad left and came back, and he's still a younger guy. I don't think it's going to get stale with him.
And they all flourished and they all prospered under this coach. So I think
it's more father time versus the coach's message.
And I don't think that narrative necessarily follows true. Although, you know, even Joel admits to himself that the game has changed. They have to find new ways to adapt to what the league is throwing at the Blackhawks right now, and
aren't they throwing
to
the old
game.
Blackhawks at the Blackhawks?
Right.
Isn't it speed and skill and just controlling the puck
to an even faster, younger degree?
Yeah,
and now you have to hope some of your younger players are able to make a next step. You know, do you want to throw a Henry Jokiharju out there at 19 years of age, depending on how his training camp goes next year?
There's so many young guys out here this last stretch. It's almost a shame they couldn't just get him up,
right,
too.
You know? And so then if you're talking about, you know, a blue line still learning on the fly here during an NHL season while you're trying to get back into the playoffs, and you're not sure of what your goaltending situation is. You're always hoping that Corey Crawford is going to be back to the old Corey Crawford. That's not a slam dunk yet. So you keep your fingers crossed that that's the situation. But again, as you get younger, especially on the back end, and it even goes through all 200 feet of ice, you know, forward play sometimes defensively has you know, broken down in structure as well. Let's stop yapping here and finally hear from the captain, Jonathan Taves, and get some of his reaction to his only coach, actually second NHL coach, to return here for an 11th season behind the bench.
What can I say? We've been through a lot playing for Joel. Stan's done a lot of great things for this team. A lot of things went sideways this year, so I think the first people you look at, not only the players on the ice, but other people you can hold accountable. And you know, it's good to know that we're going to have some consistency in knowing what we're looking at as far as players go next year. So I think everyone's committed to fixing the issues and the problems that we face this year, and same goes for Joel and Stan.
John McDonough said he didn't want to see this take a couple of years of retooling on the fly. He wants it to happen immediately. Do you think that's possible that next year, you know, like you said, everything went sideways this year, if everything goes right next year, that you could be right back on top?
Yeah, well, we got a lot of time to think about it. I think everyone does, you know, as players. You know, I think myself, the other leaders in this room, the other captains, there's a lot of things we need to do better as far as controlling what we can control and trying to make this team come together and play the right way, regardless of who's making the decisions up top or behind the bench. There's always more we can do within the locker room, so that's going to be our focus no matter what. And as players, I think we're all going to take it upon ourselves to come back stronger, in great shape, and just ready and excited to get, you know, to fulfill the potential that we knew was there this year, and we just couldn't quite peel it back.
John, there's that old theory that for a certain amount of time the coach's voice gets lost in the locker room, but I mean, if that were the case here with all the new guys, it's just you and a couple other guys who that would really apply to. Is that farthest from the truth as far as Q is concerned?
I think so. I think you know, for the guys that played for Joel for a long time, there's nothing but respect there. But at the end of the day, the game has changed. It's faster. It's younger. For our veteran guys, you know, playing that different style, it's been an adjustment. And I think for our coaching staff, it's probably been an adjustment as well. So I think, like I said, as a group, we all need to grow and get better and learn from our mistakes this year.
The captain has not been shy about calling himself out on needing to be better, and we've talked in previous podcasts about how he wears that very much so, always has, despite the positive tone that he tries to strike in the locker room when he meets with the media, always kind of taking a glass half full approach. But you know, he's calling himself out, and some of the older guys too. You know, you can think one way when you finish first, the top seed in the West a year ago going into the playoffs, before you're absolutely stunned in a first-round sweep, thinking that, yes, you know, we don't have to adjust that much going into the offseason. Look at what we did during the course of the regular season, where we were still the quote-unquote Blackhawks. But now I think this has kind of been a cold cup of water in this team's face this season, knowing during the course of the regular campaign about how much this league has changed, about how much more close teams are to the Nashville Predators of last spring than they are the Chicago Blackhawks of old. And as this team gets younger and faster and more skilled, and you try to find enough of those players, there's still a long time on some of these contracts where these guys heading into this offseason probably have to rewire themselves in terms of how they're going to prepare and be a much greater factor like they were earlier in their careers come next season.
For me, I think the scary thing is they got this cold cup of water in the face in the playoffs last year in the first round, getting swept. Mm-hmm. And then we saw them get it all season. And Taves always says the right things. And, you know, he's had a couple good stretches, especially towards the end of the season here. We're starting to look like his former self. But could they not really adjust at all, those core guys? Could they not really adjust to the speed and the way the younger guys are playing and the skill? That's the scary thing for me. It's, you kind of knew last year that they had to up their game, and everyone was saying the right thing and making promises, and we know they work hard in the offseason, and they really had absolutely nothing to show for it this year.
Yeah, and you know, part of this whole narrative with trying to catch up now to the rest of the league and how quickly it has happened. One guy who I thought improved and needed to adapt based on the way he played early this season and adjusting to the new style was Brent Seabrook, who looked extremely slow to start the season. He knew what he had to do. He got in there with Paul Goodman and the training staff, probably, you know, dropped some pounds, got a little lighter on his feet. He's still not the Brent Seabrook of 2010. I don't know if he ever will be, but at least we saw during the course of a season, you saw how he adapted and made progress, and he was a much better defenseman toward the end than he was at the beginning, became a lot more reliable. And I'm just anxious to see, you know, what kind of offseason work is in the makings for some of these guys as they try. I heard Jamal Mayer say on a post game show, it was actually before a Blackhawks game. He was asked if Jonathan Toews comes up to you and asks for advice, what would it be? And even Jamal said, if Jonathan asked me, I'd tell him to lose 10 more pounds. We know he came in lighter over the course of the last couple seasons because, you know, he felt a little heavier, went on a completely different diet. Now Jamal is even saying, when you looked at Jonathan this year compared to the last couple years when he reported to training camp, it was almost like he didn't recognize the body. And now Jamal's encouraging him to lose even more weight. I thought that was a fascinating narrative, too.
He might be the hardest guy to get to lose weight. Doesn't he, like, grow his own plants and eat all his own food? He's like his own nutritionist, like having, like, kale shakes for every meal.
He'd have to be on an all-water diet, I think.
Oh, my God. Poor Jonathan. He's going to faint on the ice next year if he listens to Jamal.
So, anyway, unfortunately, we have a couple more games here, and we'll come at you with a podcast again next week after we hear some final reaction. I'm sure Stan Bowman will speak on meeting day and closeout day early next week at the United Center. We'll bring you some of that reaction as well. A couple more things we wanted to get to on this podcast before we sign off here. The other fan question, Andy Disco on Twitter wanted to know, who is your dream guest on the Blackhawks Crazy podcast? Who would that be? I mean, Do you have a dream guest? I got a couple. Okay. Yeah, maybe you can pick one for me unless I vehemently disagree.
You'll probably like a couple. I would like, top of the list, I would go Bill Murray. A great big Hawks fan. He loves Bobby Hull. Chicago guy, sports fan.
Sure.
You know, I have a fondness of comedians, as you know, Chris. I would really like to talk to Bill Murray. I think it'd be a lot of fun in here.
I'll second that.
I got to interview him, ask him a couple of questions the night before he went into the Hall of Fame, but I would love to sit down and have Pat Foley for a good 30 minutes. I think it would be a lot of fun. I know you know him better than I do. I think that would be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Pat personifies fun. So he's been around a while.
He
always has. Yeah. I will second that motion. Is there, maybe before the end, before we sign off, I can think of another name or something like that. I did have the honor before his health deteriorated, and I think this was just in the nick of time as well. But, at my previous employment, we had what would be shrunk down into 30-minute shows called Inside Look, where we sit down with one particular person, and these interviews would sometimes go 90 minutes, 2 hours, and we try to shave them down to squeeze into basically 22 minutes of programming. And the gentleman who is being so rightfully honored in the home finale on Friday night against St. Louis, Stan Mikita, the stories are just wonderful, from coming over here as a young child, not knowing the language, to his dust-ups with Gordie Howe and Rocket Richard. The stories were absolutely fascinating. Unfortunately, due to Stan's illness, those days are not going to return, but I'm glad I had the opportunity to have that capsule with him, as he was able to recollect some of those stories. That's just the tip of the iceberg, and we had to leave so much on the cutting room floor that was absolutely amazing. But hearing him talk about that 61 season and, the heartbreak of the early 70s in the Stanley Cup against the Montreal Canadiens. It was really a great sit down, and kudos to the Blackhawks for doing one last shift again. His three grandsons will be on the ice ahead of the Friday night home season finale against St. Louis. And great to have Stan represented once again there. Anything else? We wanted to just touch real quick on, first of all, let's talk about the Wednesday night victory over St. Louis as the Blackhawks try to play spoiler. Now, the Blues still hold fate in their hands as Colorado does go into a Thursday night game against San Jose, but the Blues have the Hawks on Friday at the United Center, and then they face the Avalanche. Only one spot left as we record here. One spot left, that final wild card berth, is going to come down to Colorado and St. Louis, since Anaheim's already in, LA is already in, either by third or second in the Pacific or by wild card. So I thought that was hats off to the Blackhawks. At 3-1, they could have just mailed it in right there, but then Blake Hillman has an amazing goal. I didn't know he had that club in his golf bag with that huge booming slap shot, a shorthanded, to get his first NHL goal. And then to complete the comeback, as you just got the sense that Jake Allen and the Blues in that third period could just start feeling what was at stake. They had already lost three in a row. Here they had an opportunity with a win to leapfrog over Colorado into that eighth spot. And the Blackhawks kept coming at them. The Blues were on their heels, and you could tell that their nerves were getting a little frayed there with what was at stake in a final regular season home game in St. Louis.
I know Hillman said that was the hardest one-timer ever shot,
yeah.
So that was a good one for his first NHL goal. It was pretty sweet. And we were there at practice, I think it was Monday, and everyone was saying that they really did want to play spoiler. It was important for them to beat the Blues, and you saw that last night. They played hard when they got down a little bit. It's like the old Blackhawks. They come back into the game. They don't give up. I thought it was a great team win. Obviously, Duncan Keith had a great game. Not just that overtime goal, but that he kind of had his stick blade on the goal line and blocked it there. That was kind of a crazy play that needed a review, another review that actually went the Hawks' way for
he
once.
He had 183 shots on goal for the season coming in with just the one goal. The shooting percentage going in was 0.05%, which, since they have been keeping those records, it would set a new record. The lowest previous was Alexei Zhitnik of Buffalo back in 01-02. He had a 0.07% shooting percentage. So I think Duncan has avoided that.
He did. And we all knew he was going to be the guy that was going to win the game in overtime.
On the power play.
Probably send the Blues packing for the season.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Well, as we tape here, hopefully there's more of that coming up on Friday, and the Blackhawks can finish on a high note and hurt their arch rivals, because they now have the longest playoff win streak since the Blackhawks ended at 9. The Blues were at 6 consecutive years trying to get in for a 7th, and I think that's the longest running one in the Western Conference right now.
I thought Andreas Martensson looked really good last night, and Quinville said he was probably the most effective player.
He was.
Is that a guy we see in a Hawks sweater next year? I like his size. I like the way he plays.
That's where you start getting into these number games with some of the guys who they have to make decisions on. The Thomas Yurkos of the world. And
my chair
just
went down on its own, just so you know. I was looking at eye level with you, and now...
No. I have
things,
a tendency to do that to
here.
People.
Things
I have a tendency
here.
To
no, you put me in my place, Chris. No, Martensson scored. He looked good. It was nice to see DeBrincat get the lone goal lead again for the Hawks.
You're now Blackhawks team leader, Alex DeBrincat, in goals. Finally, a quick thought, if we will. The goaltender shuffle has continued here. And as we tape here, it was a week ago against the Winnipeg Jets, where Colin Dealey all of a sudden gets his NHL debut after probably taking an extra 15 or 20 minutes of shots at the morning skate. For all the guys who wanted to linger and work on their games, usually the backup goaltender for the night does that. And then all of a sudden he's pushed into the spotlight when Anton Forsberg suffers what is a season-ending injury during the pre-warm-up. And just Anton Forsberg's luck that he puts a couple of decent games together. And here we're waiting to see whether he can finish it out strong with all the goalie questions moving forward. His season ends. Delia comes in. Delia cramps up in the third period. And all of a sudden, here comes the one and only.
14 minutes left. That's a lot of time. And yeah, the emergency goalie came in. We'll get into that whole situation. But 14 minutes is a lot. You're up 6-2. I mean, me or you go in there, Chris, we're letting in at least 4 on 7 shots. He stopped all 7 shots.
Yeah, so Scott Foster, if you're unfamiliar, each home team in the NHL has an emergency, a local emergency guy that if both goaltenders should happen to go down on either side, he would serve that purpose, could play for either team. Foster knew on his way in as serving that role that Forsberg had gone down. He was going to have to be on standby, sat in full uniform in the Blackhawks locker room for the first the 44 minutes.
Did he take shots in warm-ups?
46 minutes?
That was a part of the night.
No,
okay, so he was in
Delia.
Gear in the locker room.
That's where the antenna all of a sudden went up when we saw it was only Delia out there.
Yeah.
And Foster comes in, takes shots from Patrick Laine, Dustin Byfuglien, Paul Stastny.
Slap shot from Byfuglien.
and manages to do the job. And it was...
It looked great.
I know. It was amazing against one of the more high gas-powered offenses. Granted, the Blackhawks already led 6-2 at that point,
again,
thankfully.
Again, though, he didn't play since college in 06 at Western Michigan.
Right.
So, I mean,
right.
Talk about being rusty in so facing a team like that.
And the best part, one of some of his Johnny's teammates and foes gathered around the TV.
Yeah.
The one shot that got out on Twitter, all gathered around, delaying their own game down the street and watching their old buddy perform in an NHL game. That was unbelievable.
It was one of the coolest things I've ever seen.
And he was cool after the game, especially in his group session with the media, which I don't get to experience that since I'm in the room hosting, so I hear all that stuff come back. And he was a blast with you guys, but now
awesome.
Has gone totally Bartman on us. And there's really no need to, because he's not Bartman.
No.
But he's disappeared off the face. I know there have been even interview requests from overseas wanting to talk to this guy, but he seemed to get it, though, in terms of it was Seabrook night. It was, a night that the Blackhawks are trying to knock off a Western Conference contender, try to build a little bit momentum. Even though he was
Sakura's debut, too.
Funny, clever, self-deprecating, yeah, I think he seemed to get the fact that, okay, these are my 15 minutes,
yeah.
And I'm going to leave it at 15 minutes.
Yeah, he did.
Have you tried to pursue him?
I did. For this very show, for Chicago Magazine, after I did my piece kind of on why the Hawks didn't make the playoffs, they wanted me to interview him. And I think the Trib did a story that he just wanted to go. It was his decision. That's why he's not on any media requests. He just wanted to go back to his normal life, kind of, which I respect that.
Yeah,
it's 15 minutes, and
it was
he did great.
Fun everyman moment, the kind that most of us could even dream about. And
the crowd was chanting his name, like the whole United Center was chanting this guy's name, who's an accountant.
Yeah,
and just off the street in a Hawks sweater.
So I asked somebody else this question. So if there was a sport that you could serve as a backup position for a professional team based on your glorified athletic past, what sport would that be? What position would it be? Well, you would be the emergency blank for which sport?
Can I have 2 months with Paul Goodman first? Or
okay.
That's how you say his name, right? Paul Goodman.
Yeah.
Strength condition coach for the Hawks. If I was in any kind of athletic shape like I used to be, I used to be fast. So I was a good base runner.
Okay.
I was a great hitter as a kid.
Great.
Great. Got hitting lessons. I was a pretty good hitter.
Yeah.
Are there stats on the internet to prove that? They're not.
Was this Little League, high school? How far back are we going?
Traveling baseball, freshman year of high school.
Nice.
And I was a good hitter, but I don't think I could hit a major league ball. But I always wanted to take BP at a park. I'd go pinch run.
Pinch runner.
Put me in there.
Okay. DH/pinch runner.
Yeah.
But don't play the field. You're a little. Are you a defensive liability?
I was okay at center field. I could play center.
All right.
Get me out there.
Put me in, coach.
Or just right.
Put me in.
Wasn't it Elaine Benes that said you put the worst people on your team?
Right. And I want everybody out there to consider, yes, what.
Well, how about you?
What sport that would be. I would, just as I was for my state championship high school basketball team, I was awesome at sitting on the end of the bench cheering for all my teammates. A couple All-Staters on the team, and
maybe I oversold myself in this analogy.
That's right. Yeah, and I would be the kid on the I don't even know if I was second five. I may have been like third five on my team, but I could shoot a little bit from the outside. Okay. But yeah, sometimes by the time high school rolls around, you're around guys with lots of hops. Sometimes getting the shot off was
were you at this height issue. When you were like 10 years old. One of those players.
This height, you said?
Yeah,
yeah, I probably. Was. Yeah, I think I only went like 5'10 to what I am now, six foot in high school. So I didn't get that growing spurt like I had been hoping to.
I'm still hoping for it.
So here we are in the media instead, reporting on things instead of playing things. Hey, we want to thank everybody for tuning in this week. Hope you enjoyed listening to the aftermath of the announcement on Thursday. John McDonough, Joel Quenneville, Jonathan Toews reacting to the fact that Stan Bowman and Joel Quenneville will be back for the 2018-2019 season. Want you to follow along on the Blackhawks Crazy Facebook page at facebook.com/Blackhawks Crazy for everything Hawks, including Scott's Chelsea blog. You're going to throw something together here again on the news on Thursday.
People can go back and read the whole recap of the emergency goalie night if they'd like, or my story for Chicago Magazine as well.
And when is that going to be? Is that already out online?
It's just online, yeah.
Okay.
Came out last week.
www.chicagomag.com. Mag.com. Okay. I'll check that out, too.
Thank you.
And follow me and Scott on Twitter, at Bowden Tweets. That's me, at Scott King Media. That's Scott. And make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and leave a review. We're going to come back at you next week at some point, hopefully earlier than later, after the Blackhawks put a final bow on this thing. Speaking of bow, we will probably hear from Stan Bowman, as well as a handful of other players. We'll bring you all the important stuff when we come back at you with a podcast next week. So keep an eye on that, both on the Facebook page and on Twitter. We'll tweet out links to it as well. I want to thank Krista Flores for handling all the technical stuff that we are incapable of. She's our technical whiz here. Also, Joel Romano for sending this thing out for everyone to share. And that's a wrap. You feeling a Friday night win over the Blackhawks? Let's get it over the Blues. Let's get it on the record right now.
I'm going to say yes.
I'm saying a Blackhawks victory over the Blues
as
well.
Yes. Really put them, some young guys again. Maybe
really put them in a bind if they aren't already by the time Colorado plays at San Jose on Thursday night. That could be their death knell if Colorado has beaten San Jose on Thursday. So thanks again for tuning in. Again, we appreciate your listenership. Again, subscribe on iTunes. And Scott King and I will be back at you talking more Blackhawks next week after the regular season is over. Thanks so much. Have a great weekend.